A Russian doping scandal, corruption allegations, and a lack of big cities volunteering to host. If the International Olympic Committee was a publicly traded company, its stock would be struggling to stay afloat. But surprisingly, the organization is making more money than ever before. And that's all thanks to a big boost from Asia. The IOC's broadcast revenue hit a record $2.9 billion in Rio and is set to climb even further in Tokyo 2020. Its sponsorship program recently topped $1 billion for the first time as well, despite several scandals over the past few years.
Harley-Davidson is revving up its marketing in an effort to generate more demand for its iconic motorcycles in an attempt to rescue its sliding stock. That's according to CEO Matt Levitich, who told Reuters the company is not exploring a merger or private equity buyout, despite some investor speculation.
Amazon.com is now making a bet on chip technology. Amazon late last year bought the maker of a home security camera called Blink. But Blink is interesting because the company says that its cameras can last a whole 2 years processing video only on a single pair of AA lithium batteries. What makes that possible is the chip inside of the Blink cameras. So for consumers, it means that devices like the Echo speaker you plug into the wall today may become wireless and portable.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's February 19th, 2018, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, another business week getting underway. That is, if you don't have the day off for the holiday. Lots of things are closed today, including the stock market, but we're here and we have a good show for you. Later in the broadcast, we're going to do a deep dive on the White House budget, the new Trump administration budget. Christine McDaniel will be here. She's a senior fellow at the Mercatus Institute. We'll look into some of the things that are in that budget and where that plan goes from here. In a minute, we'll bring in our CEO this morning for our CEO Spotlight, Peter Maldonado. From Chomps is here. We'll have a conversation with Pete coming up in just a minute. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, world stock markets are set for a sixth session of gains today, extending a recovery from a sell-off sparked by fears of creeping inflation and higher borrowing costs. Gains marginal, however, scored largely in Asian markets, with the Nikkei up almost 2%. European shares gave up initial gains to turn lower, with the Pan-European Stocks Index down almost 0.2%, trading a little bit slower than usual today, as I mentioned, because it's a market holiday here in the United States and also in China. But moves in the steel sector were pronounced in the wake of the U.S. government outlining proposals for hefty import curbs. In Europe this morning, most of the markets now have pushed into the red. The FTSE is off almost 7 points. The DAX is off almost 12 points, and the CAC is off almost 5 points. Still, those are just fractional losses there. And in Asia, the Nikkei, as I mentioned, up almost 2%. The Shanghai, everything else, with the exception of China, open today. Futures in this country still looks like they're ticking, at least on the S&P, up about 450 this morning. Dow futures up about 44. NASDAQ futures up about 21. Crude oil, $62.26 a barrel, which is up 58 cents. It is a CEO Spotlight Monday. Peter Maldonado is here from Chomps Snack Sticks. They're moving into the Chicago market. If you've ever wondered what it's like to start a new product and get it into stores, that's what our conversation is going to focus on today. Pete, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Chicago as well with Chomps.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us about the company.
Well, Chomps, we launched back in 2012. We make better-for-you grass-fed and free-range meat sticks. So we're doing grass-fed beef. We do grass-fed venison. We have a free-range turkey coming out right now. We're selling these in retail, brick-and-mortar, and a lot of e-commerce.
You're based in Naples, Florida, and you've expanded here.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So HQ is in Naples, Florida, and we're up here. We just opened an office, a satellite office here at 420 West Huron, so right in River North. And We're excited to be here. You know, for us, it was it's important to have a presence here. We kind of see Chicago as a kind of a hub for the CPG food and bev space. Mm-hmm. And for us to find the right talent, it's important to be here versus being in Naples, which might be a little more of a retiree focused, and sure. And the demographic really doesn't work for us when we're trying to build a team. So,
what is the market? What is the space like for this product? I know everybody's probably familiar with the other brands of jerky that we have out there, but What's the scene like?
So it's crowded right now. I mean, it definitely is. It's crowded. There's a lot. Since we launched in 2011, I mean, we started this. The brand started working on this in 2011. We actually went to market in 2012. You know, we were the first guys doing these grass-fed beef, you know, the better for you, mm-hmm. no sugar, all super, super healthy snack sticks. There was the normal conventional grass, you know, our gas station brands that you guys are probably all familiar with. And since then, there's been some other options that have popped up. We still maintain we maintain the crown as being the cleanest label on in the space.
Yeah.
So we're the only ones where, you know, we're not adding sugar to our product. We're Whole30 approved. We're non-GMO project verified, certified gluten-free, certified paleo. So you name it. I mean, we've got all the boxes checked. And on top of that, we're the best tasting, hands down.
Right. And so when you say clean label, that means all of that other stuff is not in there.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So when I say clean label, yeah, I'm just saying we as nutritionally sound as you can make the product.
Yeah.
That's what we do. That goes from every little input into the product, from all the raw materials. We import all of the beef from Tasmania. We import all the venison from New Zealand. And then our turkey's going to be here and domestic, and it's all free range, antibiotic free, and then it'll be non-GMO as well.
What's the challenge in importing that stuff from those other countries?
Well, a couple different things. I mean, timeline and cost. Mm-hmm. For us, we get POs, and then we have to turn around these orders and start production as quick as humanly possible. But you know, so for us, there's a long lead time, obviously. It's got to come from clear across the world, right?
Yeah.
So for us, it's been getting ahead of that and making sure that we have the raw material stocked and in the States and very close to our plant in Missouri so we mm-hmm. can get right into manufacturing.
Are you talking about the ingredients that you put into this? I mean, to reach that whole 30 level, that's an important milestone, and mm-hmm. then the paleo diet. The people that are doing those diets, they're religious about that, and so you have to meet a high bar, don't you?
Oh, you would be surprised. I mean, I've learned so much even just since we've launched this product. You know, you get asked certain questions, and I'm kind of like, I don't know the answer to that. And then so it actually pushes us to really do better and better to make sure that we're kind of hitting, you know, checking all the boxes and hitting everybody's. You know, for us, it would be great to have something for everybody, right?
Right.
It's not always possible, but we try our best. So, you know, there's some things we're working on now, just, you know, removing some ingredients that some people might have, you know, an allergy with. So for us, it's we're trying to get creative and continue to innovate that way.
It's all about getting people loyal. And first of all, they trust you. Then they become like loyal customers. And that's important when you build a brand, isn't it? To have that loyalty.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, as much as it's important to have a great product, we see it's very important to have these authentic relationships, not only with our partners and our retail partners or whoever they may mm-hmm. be, but our customers as well.
You're in Trader Joe's. That's a big deal because the people that go to Trader Joe's are generally the people we've been talking about, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about grass-fed, because I think the question I ask every time I get around somebody who's in agriculture or livestock, I always say, what makes grass-fed beef better?
Okay, so there's a long list of health benefits. You know, you've got the healthy omega-3 fatty acids. You've got CLA. These are things, and the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, those things are going to be far superior to what you're going to get with grass-fed beef. Typically, you're going to get a leaner. With grain-fed beef.
Grain-fed.
Okay, so typically you're going to get a leaner cut, and you know, so anyway, as far as the health benefits and the reason why you go that way, I mean, it's not only the health benefits within the beef itself, but it's also what's good for the environment. How are these animals being raised? Are they being raised humanely? So we go through a whole list with any one of our suppliers that we work with, and we want to make sure that they're you know, hitting all of those requirements for us.
Mm-hmm. What does that do to your price point and the cost of getting all this stuff to market? I would imagine it's not cheap.
It hurts. Yeah. It's not easy. You know, our margins are going to be much skinnier than the conventional brands you see out there. But, you know, for us, it's super, super important. And we kind of made this a commitment very early on that we're not going to cut corners. And that goes from any, you know, whether, you know, with making the product, when it comes to sourcing, we're just not going to do things to make a buck. It's more about making the best possible product. And for us, like you said before, the loyalty with the mm-hmm. customers, that's the reason we still have a business today.
Yeah.
You know, we've been doing this for 6 years now. So it's, you know, and our customers that started with us 6 years ago, we have a lot of those people that are still ordering today.
It's sort of, you're sort of making a bet that building that loyalty is going to pay off in the long
run.
You'll be around for a long time.
That's right. Yep.
So let's talk about where you got the name from. Where did you get Chomps from?
You know, I was kind of doing some brainstorming, and I knew this. I wanted this product, and I just loved. I wanted a brand name that really people would just resonate with. I mean, this is something that's very memorable. I feel like it. You know, it's a great name, and not only that, it's something that's got some versatility as well. So right now we're Chomp Snack Sticks, but there's no telling what we might do eventually with the brand. So this is, you know, we might have Chomps. Any other kind of snack you could think of.
You can chomp on a lot of stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
And the packaging, too, is kind of cool. You have in the display case there, you have they look like they're all in the same box and the colors and stuff, so that you want them to jump off the counter at people.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about you as a CEO. I mean, what is your background? What prepared you for this? Why did you choose this road?
So, yeah, it's funny. I've actually never had like a real corporate job ever in my life. I've always kind of done different roles that were was either an independent contractor. So through college, I got through college as a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was an independent contractor that way, whether I was working out of a gym or at people's homes. And then from there, I was in real estate. And so, you know, then you're kind of still running your own business. And then you know, and I actually had a frozen food company in my early 20s. That was my first go at an actual, you know, food business.
Mm-hmm.
Ran that for about 4 years. So, you know, as far as like being a CEO or at least entrepreneurial, I've always kind of been entrepreneurial. And so taking risk is kind of like what I've always done. I don't want to settle for a 9-to-5 job.
I'm guessing during your time, probably as a personal trainer and at the other place with the frozen, was it frozen yogurt?
Frozen fitness.
Frozen fitness.
Frozen meals.
Yeah. So I bet you got a lot of chance to bounce your ideas off people, didn't you, about what they wanted?
Right.
What did they tell you?
Well, I mean, listen, I have a lot of ideas. I'm just an idea guy. My employees now will tell you, or even my partner will kind of tell you. Sometimes I might have too many ideas, or they kind of rein me in. But I think it's important to kind of be creative all the time, kind of thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you create true innovation. You know, is just being creative.
You're with the expansion here into Chicago. Are you looking to add staff here? And what do you look for in a staff?
I am, yeah. So, well, I mean, it'd be great to have people with, you know, CPG, food and beverage backgrounds. For us, we're at a tipping point where we really need to be building a team of highly experienced people, just very specialized in the space. People that are better than us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where we're trying to hire people that know the business better than we do to get us to the next level. So we did very well last year. It was our first year breaking the 8-figure in revenue mark. And this year we have a clear path to tripling, actually. So we're hustling.
Yeah. And I like the fact that you're thinking of other ways to chomp on stuff, too. That's
right.
Kind of signifies what you might be going for
right.
in the future.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I mean, what is your work your CEO style? I mean, you're obviously a healthy guy. You talked about your past. Do you hire healthy people? Do you want specifically meat eaters or vegetarians? Or what kind of tone do you set, I guess, is the
well,
question.
Listen, I don't think a vegetarian or vegan is going to fit well with the company culture that we're trying to establish here. I mean, it's very important for me to have people that work with me, whether it's being an internal hire or an agency or even like an influencer on social media, I want to make sure that they're truly a fan of the product and they would use it themselves. So that being said, it's very important that we're all aligned in that way where these people would actually eat the product. And as far as me as being a CEO, you know, I'm aggressive. I mean, we set big goals and I like to, we like to get people fired up and stay very positive, and I think that's really part of our culture that we're trying to establish here, is just that shoot for the stars. You know, we're going big, and it's fun. You know, it makes work fun, waking up every morning and having very big goals to attain. That's why we do what we do.
Talk to us a little bit about the marketing a startup. What is your biggest challenge? How does it even work when you get your product ready to go? When you have few advertising dollars to spend, where do you get your product out there and in front of people?
It's grinding. So nowadays it's totally different. I mean, back in the day before social media and before, people, it's so easy now just to launch a website, and it's actually pretty cheap, you know. We're on the Shopify platform now, and, you know, we've grown with them from day one. And I had our initial website. I launched that, and it was test marketing within maybe 3 hours. In one day, actually had a live website up and was taking orders, and we were promoting that via Facebook. And for us, you know, when we initially launched this, it's as far as like proving the concept, there's a lot of information out there. You could go to Google Trends and you could kind of see and just make sure that there's people that really want the product that you're looking for. So this is kind of all the that's the steps that we took to kind of getting where we are today.
Yeah. Part of that, too, is you mentioned social media, and we hear from a lot of startups that come in for our CEO spotlight that we do here, that we're doing with you, that they find that sometimes their biggest hits are on social media.
Yeah.
That's how they're doing most of their advertising now.
Yeah. It's like that for most brands now, and I think especially in the food space. I mean, and like you said, building up a loyal following, it's just super important. You know, you've got all these influencers. There have been, you know, paleo bloggers. I mean, we have just mommy bloggers or fashion bloggers, and we've got so many different types of people that are and people just talking about the brand out there, so it's huge for us.
How do you get a chomp in the hands of one of those influencers?
Most of them reach out to us, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So you've got, like, on Instagram, they have the direct messages, and they'll reach out and kind of say, hey, can we try these? And then sometimes there's influencers that we say, hey, this person would be perfect for us. Let's introduce them to our brand, and so we'll offer to send them a product. Very rarely do we do any kind of paid influencer work. I mean, again, part of our goal is to keep everything very authentic and organic. Mm-hmm. And if you're paying your way through those, it's tough. Yeah. You know, like, people kind of see through that. So what we do is we offer product, and if they're happy with that, then we'll work with them.
And so what's the big payoff? An Instagram post, a video of them eating it? Is that the
That's great. You get this user-generated content, and it's great for us. We always try to – we could use that for our own pages and our own website. So
when do you know that you've succeeded and met your mission? Is it when you get the other guys to start knocking on your door to ask if you're for sale, or when do you know you've made a dent?
That's a good question, huh? Yeah. You know, for me, I think it's walking into an elevator and seeing a wrapper, which I don't condone littering, but seeing a wrapper of my product sitting there, like some random person was just eating this, and you know, so for me that's super cool. Or just seeing these, like you said, social media posts. If these people are just randomly doing it, taking a picture of, I love seeing pictures of little kids eating our product. I mean, that just gets me so fired up, just knowing that these little guys are actually, because those are, they're not going to lie, right?
Yeah.
If they like your product, they'll eat it. If they hate it, they're going to throw it away, right? So for me to see those little kids eating it, that it's a telltale sign.
I just got a vision of you hanging out in Trader Joe's waiting.
Just watching.
Watching.
In the,
hey, I make those.
I'm not that creepy, but I get fired up about it. Yeah. I love seeing that stuff.
So. And so here's the big question. Which one is your favorite? Which flavor is your favorite? Do you eat these on a regular basis?
Too many, actually. But I've been eating the original and the jalapeno for a long, long time. The newest flavor is the venison. So for me, that's kind of, I've been eating a lot of those. I mean, I think it's like that with any product that you make. I mean, whether it's even pizza or something like that, you kind of get not sick of eating them, but you just don't get as excited about it.
So. I was looking in before, I haven't tried one yet, but I will after the show. 100 calories each, that's not a bad number.
Actually, for the beef, then we have one of the beef flavors is Crank and Cranberry. That's got 110. They've all got 9 grams of protein. We're launching a turkey skew right now, which will have 70 calories, 10 grams of protein, 2 grams of fat. So it's huge for the bodybuilder type or fitness type people, or anybody counting macros, or trying to just stay on a low-calorie diet.
So if you had to look at 5 or 10 years, is the next step, aside from looking at other things, to Chomp, being in a bigger grocery store, moving into the big places, other places across the country?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, right now we're kind of tiptoeing in. We're in Fresh Time here locally. We're in all the Trader Joe's locations. We're in some of the Target locations here in Chicago. And then we're doing... who else we've got? We actually just got approved to roll out to 1,000 7-Eleven locations. So nice. Working on that right now. There's a few other retailers working on. One of them, Snap Kitchen. They actually just moved out of Chicago. And some other local, just independents, Galleria and River North we're in. Mm. But then as far as like other national retailers, we're talking to a bunch right now. We've got a lot of things in the works. Obviously, if I'm thinking we're going to triple, we've got some things cooking, but I don't want to talk about those until they're solidified.
Well, sure. No. It's a very exciting. Come back and talk about it when you can. We'd love to have you
absolutely.
Back. It's wonderful meeting you. Best of luck to everybody at Chomps.
Thank you very much. Nice meeting you as well.
Pete Maldonado is the CEO of Chomp Snack Sticks. You can find more about his company online at chomps.com. And also follow them on Twitter at GoChomps.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Upturnative announced it has partnered with GreatEyeGlasses.com to provide the online retailer with access to its online prescription renewal technology. The deal will allow Upturnative to offer online vision tests to Great Eyeglasses customers. Food conglomerate Tyson Foods, which has a $150 million startup venture fund in Chicago, has announced partnerships with local tech incubator 1871 and Plug and Play, an innovation platform and accelerator in Silicon Valley, as it aims to connect and collaborate with startup and tech companies. Tyson said the new partnerships will allow it to ramp up its innovation initiatives to become more sustainable in the future. In Hireology, a Chicago-based HR software company launched in 2010, raised $7.3 million in equity funding. It last raised a $12 million Series C round in 2016. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the program. President Trump last week released his 2019 budget proposal calling for increased spending on the military, border security, and even the opioid crisis. But the White House blueprint has quite a bit of cuts in it. And those have been taking much of the attention front and center in the national conversation over the last week. We thought we'd do a little dive on this morning. Christine McDaniels is with us. She's a senior fellow at the Mercatus Institute. Christine, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
I mentioned some of the highlights there, the places where the increased spending is going, but am I wrong to say that the headlines have all been about what is going to be cut? It seems like a lot's going to be cut.
Yes. Well, when you said that, I raised my eyebrows. There's a lot of additional spending in this. As you know, it raises the cap to $300 billion. And one of those things it calls for is a reciprocal tariff, which is basically the ability for President Trump to impose taxes on U.S. imports. And that's what we're really concerned about.
Well, tell us how reciprocal tariffs work.
Well, the original idea behind reciprocal tariffs goes back to the 1930s when all countries came to the table from around the world trying to negotiate downward and then lock in lower tariffs. So everything you see now reflects decades and decades of negotiation. We have certain tariffs on our things. Other countries have certain tariffs on their things. Those were all trade-offs made at the negotiating table. So President Trump, comes to office and he sees, the U.S., imports blue widgets from China for a 0% tariff, but China puts a 10% tariff on our blue widgets when we want to export to them. So if they want to do that, then we're going to crank up our tariffs to 10%. So that's how he sees reciprocal tariffs.
And so for those of us who are out doing shopping in the economy, this translates into us paying more, I'm guessing, for big box items and things that are going to be impacted by this, and washing machines, things made and manufactured overseas.
Yeah, it's a tax on American consumers. It's a tax on American businesses, because remember, 40 to 50% of our imports are intermediate inputs that businesses use, and small businesses import their intermediate inputs as well. So it increases the cost of doing businesses for American business for U.S. firms, and that reduces their competitiveness. It also reduces their ability to compete abroad. So it's a 10, 15, 20% increase at your checkout at Best Buy or Walmart, and it's also it's a tax on U.S. businesses trying to compete here and abroad.
And so what will the result of this be with the economy? Is it going to hurt the economy?
Well, if it happens, yes, it will definitely slow economic growth, reduce employment. We already have a pretty tight labor market, and again, hurt U.S. consumers and U.S. businesses. But the practical aspect of this is also interesting. I mean, would we really be able to do this even if we wanted to? We've locked ourselves into world trade rules, and we can't just start to increase tariffs on particular items because we don't like what our predecessors agreed to. Other countries will retaliate, and then that could lead to some pretty big taxes on our exports into those countries too.
Congress will have a chance to weigh in on this as well, won't they?
Yes, they will, and so we're working very hard to keep the information flowing and to make sure everybody knows the consequences of these potential decisions.
The Trump administration really seems to like this idea of tariffs. We're seeing, in the last 24 hours, he's turned his attention to steel and aluminum imports. Here we are again going down that street.
Yeah. President Trump's frustration with countries like China is understandable because, he gets to office and he sees, these huge volumes of imports coming in from countries like China at very low prices. But the thing to do is to get back to the negotiating table and, either with China or team up with our allies who are just as frustrated with China as we are and negotiate stronger trade rules on state interference and subsidies. But all tariffs do is it's just a tax on American citizens, American consumers, American businesses. And so basically it's saying, China, we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot. And that doesn't help us, and it doesn't change China's behavior.
An idea that he's already started to do with NAFTA, we're starting to renegotiate that. There's also some indications that perhaps we will try to renegotiate the TPP. I know he wants to do that. It seems like that would be the safer bet to do is renegotiate. What do you think the chances are for that?
Yeah, exactly, Steve. I was so excited to see to hear Trump's statements when he was in Davos a few weeks ago, the World Economic Forum, and that's the way to do it. Renegotiate NAFTA. It's an outdated agreement now. It does need to be updated, and get back to the table, the negotiating table, with our Trans-Pacific partner allies, and we're very hopeful that will move forward.
Christine, you're an expert in trade, and obviously we appreciate your expertise on this. What does the U.S. stand to lose if we keep doing all of this with these countries? The North American Free Trade Agreement, we've seen estimates of perhaps millions of jobs could be lost if that falls apart. We're seeing in the Asia-Pacific region, those countries are moving on without us. Canada, Mexico seem willing to move on without us. We could isolate ourselves here in a bad way, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, the thing is, think of it like, all the countries in the world are basically just in this big marathon. And, if it starts raining and if you want to take a time out and get under, get underneath an umbrella and stop for a while, you can do that. But everyone else is going to keep moving forward. So it doesn't help us to try to protect ourselves from the world when they keep moving forward. We've got to put our best foot forward. Competition and progress, they've always been messy. It's messy today. It was messy for our ancestors, and it's going to be messy for our kids. We've just got to keep going.
The larger budget, I know that your trade is your expertise on this, but the rest of the budget, I mentioned all of those cuts. We're seeing, you know, big cuts to perhaps health areas, food stamps, some other areas as well. Do you think this budget is going to look a lot different when Congress gets done with it?
I don't know. By increasing the cap $300 billion, that it is a huge red flag, you know, and without changes, the already historically high national debt will continue to rise, and our government's ability to pay for so many functions, I mean, from food stamps to defense, will begin to rely wholly on borrowed money. And remember, China and some is one of those huge lenders. So, you know, the American public and our leaders, you know, we need to be honest with ourselves and ask, are we willing to give up a little bit today so we can have a sustainable tomorrow?
I heard one estimate say that we're moving into that area where we're going to be paying more to service that debt than we would for some of these programs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Those are the numbers coming out of CBO, Congressional Budget Office. We've been watching those very closely, too. And it's, again, this is going to take political leadership and some really, really tough questions. But the political leaders have to be honest with themselves, and they've got to be honest with the American public. There's really no free lunch. I mean, these programs are, everybody wants everything, but, you know, there's a trade-off.
All right. Christine, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your expertise.
Thanks, Steve.
Christine McDaniel, a senior fellow at Mercatus Institute, talking to us a little bit about trade and the Trump budget here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 64 points. NASDAQ futures are up 26. S&P futures are up about 5. U.S. markets will be closed for this President's Day holiday, but markets around the rest of the globe are wide awake this morning. In London, markets are off just by about a tenth, and in Germany and France, markets are mixed this morning. In Asia, markets are generally higher, except for China's markets, which are closed for the holiday. Today, oil is at $62.19 a barrel. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. First, the iconic guitar company Gibson may be facing bankruptcy in the near future. The American company, which has supplied some of the world's biggest stars with their instruments in the middle of a financial crisis, guitarists like Santana, Slash, and Bob Marley among the long list of Gibson clients that have provided their Les Paul and SG guitars in the 116-year history. Bill Lawrence is the chief financial officer. He left the company after a year in that role after there was this growing financial issue. The Nashville Post claims that these notes must be refinanced by the end of the year. There's about $145 million worth of debt that the Gibson company is facing. Also, there has been growing scrutiny of the Mercedes maker Daimler. Investigators have found that cars were equipped with software that may have helped them pass diesel emission tests. This according to a German newspaper reporting yesterday, citing confidential documents. There has been growing scrutiny of diesel vehicles since Volkswagen admitted in 2015 to installing secret software on nearly 580,000 U.S. vehicles that allowed them to emit up to 40 times the legally allowable emissions while meeting standards tested by regulators. Daimler, which faces ongoing investigations by U.S. and German authorities into excess diesel emission, has said investigations could lead to significant penalties and recalls. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, February 19th. Lots of markets, lots of things closed today because of the President's Day holiday, but we have a busy week again of earnings and other economic news. Starting tomorrow, Home Depot and Walmart will issue quarterly earnings. On Wednesday, we'll get to see the Federal Open Market Committee meeting minutes. And on Thursday, Hewlett-Packard and Chesapeake Energy earnings, Potbelly earnings on Friday. We'll also get on Wednesday U.S. existing home sales, just among some of the economic reports that are due out this week that could move the markets.